The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Once again to It Came From The Radio. This is your host, Mohar Torres, speaking.
Hi.
Hi.
That was the outside world saying hi back. That was great.
Well, you said this is Mohar Torres, and they said hi.
Wow. I never thought this was interactive radio.
Yes, there you go.
With me in the studio, I have our senior correspondent, Charlie Saladino.
Yep.
And I have, the traveling correspondent, Hassan Godwin, on the phone. Right?
Yes.
All right.
Reporting to you from Ice Station Earth.
So you made it back to Earth now.
Yes.
Ice Station Earth.
Where it is a balmy 250 degrees below zero.
Mm.
Okay.
Wait till tonight.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm leaving the planet for tonight.
So if anybody's having any trouble listening to us on the air, you can go online to www.am1240wgbb.com and listen to us on the live audio streaming. Also, you can go on to the TuneIn app. If you have the TuneIn app, you can listen to us on there. You have the multimedia devices.
Right.
And also on the GBB website, you can see us in the studio right now, high definition right now. Friday night, you're listening to us live. If you are listening to us on the archives or on iHeartRadio, you'll be seeing something else if you go to the website.
Stop it. They get it. They know.
Okay. They might not know. This might be their first time listening to us.
The kids today, man, their knowledge of technology exceeds ours beyond all measure of comprehension. So it's okay.
All right. So I'll take it away with the news. We have a lot of news because we didn't have a new segment last week. So we have tons of news.
Last 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that is right. We haven't had news. That's why I have 4 pages of news in front of me. That explains a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So, as always, the news is brought to you in part by the Big Apple Con. The 20th anniversary convention is coming up on the 7th of March, which is 2 weeks away, I believe. Yeah, 2 weeks away. Tickets are on sale for $15 if you send a money order or a check. Otherwise, you got to pay $20. So if you want a $5 discount, money order is the way to go. They're going to have headliners such as Jake the Snake Roberts, the guy who played the Toxic Avenger. He's going to be there.
Is he going to be in makeup?
I don't think so. I hope not.
He looks like that for real. They just like spruced him up a little bit.
Maybe. They had to dress him down for the part. He's waiting for the reaction. Rowdy Roddy Piper is going to be there, and 2 Power Rangers are going to be there. The replacement Red Ranger, Steve Cardenas, is going to be there, who we've already interviewed on the show for many interviews. And none other than Jason David Frank, the original Green Power Ranger, who's incredibly popular, probably more popular now than he was back then.
I was waiting for that.
Exactly.
Which simply means that Mark is going to be there, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
There's going to be 2 Power Rangers. We'll know exactly where Mark is going to be.
We will also be there. We are actually on the website as a guest.
Yes,
and,
we are guests on. Well, not you're a guest. I'm not a guest.
Well, you're on the list, so you're on the guest list.
I'm on the list.
We're going to have a table there. And then we're actually going to have a separate section interview. For those people who are familiar with the Penn Pavilion and the Big Apple Con, when you go in and you get your tickets or your badge or whatever to come in, as soon as you walk in, on the left-hand side is a giant glass which overlooks Madison Square Garden, because it's across the street from Madison Square Garden. That's where we're going to be doing the interviews, right there in front of everybody. So it's going to be
really. Are we going to be behind the giant glass or at Madison Square Garden?
We're going to be behind the giant glass.
Oh, okay. You didn't explain that.
Yeah, we'll be across the street at Madison Square Garden. No, we're going to be inside the building right by the entrance. So that's going to be kind of cool. We'll be doing interviews there. And we'll be live tweeting the event so people can come and see what's happening at the con. So keep an eye out for that. And also, I'm obligated to mention the Donuts and Comics that Mike Carbonaro is doing. The video, the first video will be up, should be shortly, on our Facebook page and the YouTube page that we have, talking about Donuts and Comics, which is a series of events. And Mike Carbonaro wants to have one every other month, so the next one is going to be up in May. And he wants people to register. So you can register with your questions, and if you sign up, register, you come down with your questions, well, I'll read the questions to Mike Carbonaro live on the next episode, and he's going to give away free donuts, free comics, and free coffee to everybody who registers.
I'll be there.
Plus,
those are the people who are going to get the free donuts and coffee. Right.
Plus,
there.
For those of you who have comics that want to be appraised, the first 12 people can get free appraisals, so that's a pretty good deal.
Wow.
So, yeah, we'll make sure you guys check out for that, too. So now let's start with the sad news. Gary Owens, best known for the announcer of Ronan Martin's Laugh-In, died this week.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Gary appeared on many TV shows during his seven-decade of career. Most notably, Gary Owens voiced many animated characters, such as Roger Ramjet, Space Ghost. He was the announcer on Garfield and Friends. He was a Powdered Toast Man on the Ren and Stimpy Show. He played Captain Squash on Barbie's World. He played Dirk Niblett on Square One on PBS. He played the Blue Falcon in the Dynamite Dog Wonder cartoon. He played Commander Ulysses Ferrell in SWAT Cats. And he was the announcer for the Superhuman Samurai Cyber Squad, just to name a few.
Wow.
And he was a spry 80 years old.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was
better.
Well, Gary.
Yeah.
He was one of the icons in my generation, just for the laughing things.
Yeah, he was. That was, yeah, he had, you know, the classic radio voice of everybody.
He should get an honorary letter for all the work that he did.
He should have. He should have get one. So President Obama, if you're listening,
they should add up all the ages of his characters he played.
That's and then he'll get two letters.
Give him the letter.
Yeah.
There you go.
So moving on. Let's see.
Wait.
Yes. Wait. What?
That's it with the bad news.
That's it with the sad news. Why? You got something?
I got sad news.
All right. So from the
first, plenty of people are dead.
That's not.
I have sad news. Loads of people have died.
I have sad news. I'm here.
Yes.
No, no. I just want to say for the music world, Leslie Gore passed away. It's my party, and I'll cry if I want.
Oh, okay, yes. Gore.
And Luis Jordan, who was a great actor, but all our people will know him as the evil man in Swamp Thing.
Oh.
Yeah, he was 88, I believe.
Oh,
wow.
I didn't know.
Yeah, Leslie Gore was just 68, but Luis Jordan was 88.
Wow.
He also played in other roles, like Gigi, that was his, with Leslie Gore.
Right.
Right, and stuff like that. But we would know him as the evil man on Swamp Thing.
Wow.
So, all right.
I don't know if we ever reported Glenn Larson having passed away.
Yes, we did.
I don't know if we did.
Yeah, we did a whole thing about that. Maybe it was one of the ones where you were snowed in. But yeah, I did Glenn Larson, yes.
On Ice Station Earth?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, well, I just found out about it. So I wasn't even listening when I was snowed in that day.
To the show. our own staff members do not listen to the show. That's great.
Well, he went out for an ice pop or a sandwich or
something. I had to. It's freezing here.
Somebody sent me something very amusing. It was a picture of Jack Nicholson in the stand when he was when he died in the stand, and it said "Winter on Long Island." I thought that was amusing. All right, move on.
All right, moving on. Let's see. All right. So after all has been said and done from the interview fiasco, Disney/Marvel and Sony has decided to team up and have Spider-Man join the Marvel Cinematic Universe after all. For those of you not paying attention,
not really a surprise.
Or care for that matter, a long time ago, Marvel Studios had sold off the film rights to some of the most popular characters to different movie studios. Most notably, X-Men and all mutant-related stuff, along with Fantastic Four, went to Fox, and Spider-Man went to Sony. Spider-Man will appear in the first most likely in Captain America 3. And then we'll show up in Amazing Spider-Man number 3, which is due out on July 28th, 2017, which will be produced by Marvel, Kevin Feige, and Amy Pascal, who is stepping down from Sony following the Sony hack. So she was like the co-chairperson, and she's stepping down because of all those nasty emails of hers that got leaked. So one of her parting gifts is to be in charge of this thing. Mm-hmm. Marvel says...
executive voice.
Spider-Man is one of Marvel's great characters, beloved around the world. We're thrilled to work with Sony Pictures to bring the iconic web-slinger into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which opens up fantastic new opportunities for storytelling and franchise building. Sony says...
We're really sorry we screwed up so bad. Now we've lost Spider-Man.
We always want to collaborate with the best and most successful filmmakers to grow our franchises and develop our characters. Marvel, Kevin Feige, and Amy, who helped to orchestrate this deal, are the perfect team to help produce the next chapter of Spider-Man. This is the right decision for the franchise, for our business, for Marvel, and for the fans.
And a side note, we're bringing back the cassette Walkman.
Sony Pictures will continue to finance...
Wait a minute. Just for a second.
Yes.
Didn't they reboot the entire franchise and spend almost $100 million between the two movies combined just to keep the rights out of Marvel's hands?
Yes.
$100 million.
Yeah. And now all of a sudden, this is the right thing to do and the right team to do it. And we're very pleased to be collaborating with this. Come on. You recast the entire franchise with a new director, new actors, new costumes, new characters.
Yep.
And spend a bajillion dollars in order to do that. And now all of a sudden, Marvel is actually the best place for it.
Because I know that's where the money is. That's what the money is. Sony Pictures.
That's where the money is now, because those two movies did abysmal as far as they're concerned.
Yeah,
by their lowered expectations. You remember that conversation.
Yes, I do. Sony Pictures will continue to finance, distribute, and own and have a final creative control of Spider-Man film. So
yeah,
that's a bummer.
You know,
it's
what?
Still their money, but
yeah,
no, it's widely speculated that that's not even true. That's just a caveat to save face. But for the most part, they're not in charge of anything. I don't see Marvel signing a deal where they still allow Sony to be in charge of whatever they do with something that is essentially their character in the first place.
Right.
Yeah, but Sony's crafty, because in the contract it says that Marvel can only use the Twinkie Spider-Man.
Yes, the Twinkie Spider-Man. Yeah. You're still with that. That's hilarious.
I'm still on that Twinkie Spider-Man. I can't believe it.
There's a lot of speculatory debate as to whether or not it will be Peter Parker or Miles Morales.
Yeah,
the Ultimate Spider-Man.
They're talking about rebooting the franchise for part 3, but we'll see what happens. It all depends what's going to happen when he first appears in a Marvel movie, to see what they're going to do.
Yeah. Well, we'll know about it way before it appears in the movie, because nobody keeps secret anymore. But yes, we will not know about that until quite a while from now.
Yes.
You're correct.
Even.
Speaking of stuff that people don't, I totally messed this up.
Speaking of stuff that people can't speak of.
Speaking of stuff. All right, Amazon Studios.
That never loses.
Has teamed up with Sid and Marty Krofft to develop a reboot of the live-action series Sigmund and the Sea Monsters. Sigmund and the Sea Monsters. Featured Sigmund, a monster who is booted from his home by his nefarious brothers for being too nice, whereupon he is befriended by two boys who hide him in their clubhouse. Executives say...
executive
I don't even have a comment.
Sid and Marty are geniuses, and we are honored to be working with them to bring the world to return of what we love as TV's most fabulous and funniest sea creature ever.
Everyone in the executive world is honored to do something. Have you ever noticed that dialogue is almost exactly the same for any subject?
Well, yeah, that's why they're all... It's one group of executives, just one group.
Yeah.
Sid found Sigmund swimming in the ocean as seaweed, boy, are we lucky to recreate Sigmund and the Sea Monsters
with
Roy Price and Tara Sunson at Amazon Studios.
God.
So,
good God.
Sig found a sea monster swimming in the ocean.
Right.
How hard did he have to look for that? I'm in an ocean. There's a big thing swimming. I'll call it a monster. It's a sea monster. We're in a sea.
It's sea done. Monster. We're done.
We're done. Okay, I'm going home.
So you got to look up for Amazon, .com to see
the sea
pilot.
Monster jumps up. Hey, you want to be my friend? And he goes, yeah, sure, but I'm going home now. I'll see you later.
No word.
I'll be home, sea monster.
Yeah. No word on when the pilot will air, but
the pilot.
No need to have any word about
They're
it either.
They're having a pilot. They don't feel your executive voices don't feel confident enough that they can go right into the series. We
go right
need
to
a pilot.
Series.
They need a pilot. Yes.
They're going to need a pilot, a stewardess. A cabin boy for this one. They're going to need everything.
Speaking about they're going to need everything. From the That Still Exists department, SpongeBob SquarePants, Sponge Out of Water, the movie, and 50 Shades of Grey, the movie, both played side by side at a theater in a drive-in in North California this weekend, leading to many outraged parents.
What a surprise.
Parents says
50 Shades of
all the parents together.
Yes, all the parents said. At the time, there was a woman being slapped naked and bound up, so we had to have our children close their eyes. I could see another car behind us that had children with their eyes closed also.
And that's just what was happening at Bikini Bottom.
There is no way to avoid looking at that screen. It's too tempting. So we couldn't stay. We had to turn around. My children were devastated.
Your children were devastated.
Come and see 50 Shades of SpongeBob SquarePants.
We have decided never to teach our children about the birds and the bees.
Yeah.
In light of this particular situation.
The kids were watching that. All the parents were watching SpongeBob.
So the drive-in had only two screens, one pointing north and one pointing west, but both screens are easily visible from most vantage points. Personally, I'm just waiting for someone to sue somebody else.
Well, here you go.
We're just hearing about the movie theater manager who is now looking for a new job. now on unemployment.
Okay. Just for drive-in people, just so you know, you should, if you're going to have two screens, have one pointing north and one pointing south. It's just so damn logical. Really, we'll have one point, and we'll point one west. Yeah. Thank you. I'll be here all week. Try to veal.
So people didn't know that the drive-in still existed, but there's one that had both movies out there. So there you go.
That's a big reveal of this news story, that there are still drive-ins.
Yes, that's why it's from the That Still Exists department. That was what it was. Speaking of departments.
Wait a minute.
Oh, yes. Wait, we got something else. Yes.
Just because I wasn't really listening to you. Where is this driving?
In California. Northern California.
Yeah.
Don't feel bad, Charlie, because I'm still shocked that we have a That Still Exists department in the first place. I want to visit that place.
Speaking of other departments, we have we just talked about this department.
we are a giant.
We just talked about this. There's a drive-in that one screen faces. Spock, a drive-in, one screen faces.
DC Comics will end its new 52 imprint as of June 3rd. If we mentioned a couple weeks ago, we mentioned how DC Comics were going to have that they revamped the whole universe. How Marvel was going to revamp it, and how Disney, how DC did it, and it wasn't working. And then Marvel's going to do the exact same thing that Disney was doing, so blah, 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 blah. So now DC is saying, it didn't work. We're going to stop the new 52 imprint. Afterwards, they will consist of 24 brand new comics that are coming out and 25 ongoing comics, which are still carrying on.
Executive says,
this heralds in a new era for the DC universe, which will allow us to publish something for everyone and be more expansive and modern in our approach and to tell stories that better reflect the society around us. Whether you've been a DC fan your entire life or whether you're new to comics, there will be a book for you beginning in June.
Wow. Yes. In other words, please forgive us. Please keep reading. Please. Our children depend on this.
This relaunch will come after the end of April and May's Convergence event, which sees different universes from the DC universe coming together and then having some grand devastating effect, which launches a new company, which what we reported on is exactly what Marvel's doing for the summer, which is having the universe come together and then poof, have
Mark's,
a new thing
Mark's
out of it.
Looking really excited and he's staring at me like I really care.
But it's so fantastic that this is happening in lieu, like,
yes, it's
weeks after Marvel announced they're going to do the exact same thing.
For the comic fans that are out there, you know, this is, it's crazy how both major companies, each one saying, you know, we're different than the other guy, we're different than the other guy, are doing the exact same thing in reverse. Yeah. One saying, yeah, we're not going to do this anymore, and we're going to restart it. And the other one's like, well, we never restart it, but we're going to restart it anyway. So what the hell? Like,
and then the other one says, well, that didn't work, so we're restarting the restart.
Yeah, it's just...
And then the real comic book people, what issues do I buy and put in plastic?
Yeah, you can't even follow it, which is, once again, why we like to support the independent guys.
Yeah.
So we got two... almost
what
out
do
of
we
time.
Got?
All right, so we have a final bit of news.
The news is over.
So it was going to be a quick one. Vanilla Ice, also known as Robert Van Winkle, has
I've
been charged
this.
In connection with a home burglary adjacent to where he was renovating a home for his reality show, The Vanilla Ice Project.
Oh, my God.
Police says he was taken into custody Wednesday and is being charged with burglary and grand theft in connection with an incident that happened sometime between the past month. Numerous items of furniture, a pool heater, bicycles, and more were stolen. We determined that Robert played a role in the crime, and the items have since been identified and returned to the rightful owner. So he was having a reality show called, you know, Let's Make This House, and then he's stealing something for the next-door neighbor's house.
Yeah, that's
well
great.
Done,
well, the
vanilla.
good thing he didn't steal jewelry, because when the cops picked him up, he goes, hey, what is this for? And they would say, ice, ice, baby.
Oh, boy.
I know.
Wow.
We're
waiting for the rim shot. Oh, there you go. That's the studio audience.
That's
right
the
there.
Studio audience. They're attacking. I'm running.
And speaking of celebrities, Nicholas Brendon, best known for playing Xander Harris on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, was arrested for felony grand theft on Tuesday.
He thought he
was playing the game.
Police says... Nicholas had been attending a comic convention where he got drunk and caused $450 worth of damage to his hotel room. He also owed $380 in food and beverage charges and fell asleep in a hotel employee's office. Nicholas refused to pay his bill and was charged with grand theft. The lawyers say, this is the best part, Nicholas is unfortunately battling a disease that many of us don't understand.
Yes, a lot of money and not enough brains.
We are working with him to improve upon the situation at hand and look toward the future. He's sorry for his actions and takes what happened last night very seriously.
I will never do it again.
He will take great care to ensure his safety in the future.
His safety?
Yes, that's...
Yeah. And the fact that we skipped over, he was sleeping in the employees lounge. What was it? The employees'
office.
Office, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's why he didn't want to pay. He wasn't in his room. There's the loophole.
There we go. All right, so we are ready for our break. We'll be right back with the KFIN Radio.
If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music.
Two marvelous I promise.
Wow, that was hot. Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From Radio. This is host Mark Torres speaking along with our senior correspondent,
I'm
Charlie Saladino, Hassan Gawand, the traveling correspondent, right?
Say it a little more grudgingly, please.
The traveling correspondent. And we have a very special guest today.
Very special.
He's a friend of the show. He's been a friend of the show for many, many, many years. And I am always honored to remind everybody, our listeners, and especially our guests, that he is in the list of having the best reason for missing out on being on our show. He had a he was going to call into the show as he's doing right now, and he was working his day job that night, and he had a dock fire, and he didn't show up.
Oh,
and we're
yeah.
like, you know, why didn't you call? He's like, it was like a fire. I'm like, that's the greatest reason ever to not be on the show, is because you had an emergency, like a fire. So I'm always reminding him of that, and this was years and years ago, but he was so cool to always allow me to poke fun at him with this, and his project is still going further and further along. He is the creator of Headlock Comic, which is a wrestling comic, and it is Mike Kingston. Say hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
So we actually had you as a mini interview at the New York Comic Con. You had the Kickstarter campaign, which was going on for the comic book, but let's just start off with, what is Headlock?
Okay. Well, you know, I've been a fan of wrestling and a fan of comics my whole life, and I was always sort of frustrated that there were never any good wrestling comics, so I decided to write a wrestling comic that I thought wrestling fans would like. It's about a kid who's a theater major in college who falls in love with wrestling, and he decides he wants to become a wrestler, and it's his sort of journey through the wrestling business, kind of a coming of age story in the middle of the insanity that is professional wrestling. So that's kind of the elevator pitch, I call it.
And it's been going on for quite some time. When did the first issue come out?
I think our first issue came out at the end of 2008. And then we've been sort of plugging away. You know, it's the comic book industry is extremely difficult, and you know, I had been haggling on and off for years with different publishers and whatnot, and it wasn't really until Kickstarter kind of became a thing that it really enabled us to kind of move forward with this in a bigger way.
Now, the small way was pretty darn good, I have to say, because the comic in and of itself was a great read. It was very interesting. It had heart to it, which, and it's not superheroes. It's a regular guy in a world of wrestling, so it needed a solid foundation to work off of. Was that a conscious thing, or were you just hoping that you were going to get all the celebrities and wrestling in there? How did that come out to be?
You know, I've always found wrestling to be an art form, and I think if you're a fan of wrestling, if you've grown up as a wrestling fan, you end up having to defend your fandom to about 50% of the people you meet. Most people love it. You know, some people hate it. It's a very polarizing thing, so you know, I made a conscious decision to do, you know, to make Mike Hartman a theater major and then send him through the wrestling world so we could sort of examine the craft of wrestling as a performance art. And I think ultimately that's my goal when it's all said and done, is for it to be sort of my defense of my fandom and sort of proving wrestling as an art form. So, yeah, it's always been, I always intended it to be the story that it is. The way it sort of, you know, morphed into having all these famous wrestlers jump into it, I never imagined in my wildest dreams.
Now, I know Charlie used to hang out with the old WWE guys, right? You said that.
Well, our Herman Sinertia, his brother was Taz. Herman was.
Oh yeah.
Herman was a co-host on the show for years.
Herman Chimp Sinertia.
Right, and we grew up together. And his younger brother became Taz. And
wow, that's,
so
cool.
I've always was enjoyed watching wrestling, and you know, especially like in their kitchen when Taz was showing his bouts when he was in the extreme wrestling thing with this crazy man Sabu, and who his victory, Sabu's victory thing was to launch himself off the ring and break a table. And it was just great entertainment. I loved it. So, you know, I'm really excited about this. I've been looking at it, and it's really something.
Thank you.
So the question is that from way back when, in 2008, when you started, and you said so many things has happened between then and now, what do you think about the actual wrestling industry? Because it has changed from back in the day to now. What are your thoughts on that?
It's interesting. I think the WWE is struggling a little bit to sort of find its way, I guess. You know, but by the same token, I think, you know, the independent scene has been very strong. So, you know, New Japan is interesting. You know, there's tons of interesting and innovative stuff that's going on, you know, in the American independent scene. I was just in New Orleans a couple weeks ago, and I was a guest at Luke Hawk's Wildcat promotion, and that was, it was packed. The crowd was super hot. You know, it was good. I mean, I think that there's a lot of people that are discovering indie wrestling, and you know, NXT is a lot of fun too. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of good stuff out there. You know, if you know where to look. But I do think the WWE's got some storytelling issues on their hands.
Is it important, or is it not important to have a story behind the wrestling, or can they just people go out and wrestle?
I think the story is always important. You know, that's the one thing that people always want more than anything else. I mean, I think that there's a certain segment of the fans that want wrestling action, but I think if you want to hook the mainstream viewers, you've got to have a real issue. You know, if I can get into, like, and it's a similar audience, and it's a similar sort of promoting, but like MMA, you know, Ken Shamrock and Teal Ortiz, I mean, towards the end there, Shamrock was sort of washed up, and I mean, everybody knew those fights were going to end quickly, but they had such a personal issue. You know, it wasn't the fight quality that sold the tickets. You know, it was a huge pay-per-view audience for them, but it was the issues, the personal issues. You know what I mean? I think Steve Austin and Vince McMahon had a real issue that people, you know, that resonated with people. You know, I think finding that connection, I think, is always going to be the difference between wrestling being sort of at the level it is now and being, you know, sort of a hot pop culture, you know, commodity like it has been in the past in various cycles.
Hassan, do you have a question for Mike?
Yeah. How do you find your product is resonating with the actual wrestling community in and of itself? Do you have any reaction from them at all?
Yeah, I mean, the wrestlers themselves like it. I mean, the wrestlers who like comics love it. I mean, I've had 13 televised wrestlers contribute to my books, either, you know, with story or arts. You know, wrestling fans like it. You know, the hardest thing for us is just sort of, you know, people are so brand blind these days. And, you know, so, I mean, I'm an independent on the comic side, and I'm independent on the wrestling side. So getting people to give it a chance, I think, is the biggest hurdle. And once people do give it a chance, I mean, I feel like our the feedback to the books has been overwhelmingly positive. So, you know, that's it's just, you know, we just try to get people to take a chance on us, you know, crack one open and give it a read.
What have you been doing to convince people to give it a chance? So that's, like, the hardest dilemma that independents run into, is trying to get the word out and trying to convince people to try the product out. So what, if anything, have you been doing to make sure that they give it the attention it deserves?
You know, I just hustle. You know, I go to every independent show I can. It's a little trickier this time of the year because of the weather. You know, but I travel a lot. I go to whatever conventions I can, you know, and it's all sort of balanced between, you know, my regular job and the time I can get off from work. But I just try to get out in front of as many people as I can, because I think that, you know, when I get to talk to people about it, I think they see the passion I have for what I'm doing. And I think that really helps sell the book a lot. I mean, I also, obviously, I do a lot of shows with wrestlers. I mean, Jerry and I are doing a show in Kansas City in a couple weeks, Planet Comic-Con. Jerry and Booker T and I are doing C2E2 in a in Chicago in April, and that helps add a little legitimacy to it. You know, sometimes I think maybe somebody would walk by it, but, you know, and they're like, oh, wow, these guys are behind it. That gives it a little extra oomph when it, you know, when they're sort of looking at it. So, you know, I just try to make as many personal connections as I can. It's a lot of miles on my car. It's a lot of, you know, time away on the weekends. I mean, when I do comic book conventions, I work Sunday night through Thursday night, so a lot of times I get out of work Friday morning and I drive right to a show. I set up for 3 days, and then I leave the show and drive right back to work. And I don't even see my house for the weekend. So, you know, it's a grind, but that's what you got to do, you know, get people's attention sometimes.
The weird thing is, I find myself saying this every week, every time we talk to an independent creator, how there's so much work that goes into making a product, and a good product, I have to say. What do you think is most important about having your vision out there? I mean, if you decided I could just stay home for the weekend and enjoy my warm house and enjoy my TV, or like I'm going to go drive out to Dumpwater, Florida to promote my book, what is the motivation behind it?
Yeah, just believing in what you're doing. Yeah, I really love what I do, and, you know, the positive feedback that I've gotten from to get feedback from people that you grew up admiring is such a great feeling, you know. To have a guy like Jerry Lawler tell me, you know, that he likes my book, or, you know, Booker T, or, you know, famous comic book people tell me they really like my stuff and they want to, you know, be a part of it, like that really makes me feel good. And, I mean, not to disparage the job that I used to pay my electric bill, but, you know, I get a lot more out of that, you know, sort of personally and creatively than I do, you know, sort of slogging for the man.
The one thing that blew my mind, we actually have the, if you're looking at the webcam live, we actually have Headlock the Last Territory here. I read that, and what really got me was the little stories in the end done by actual wrestlers. And they had so much heart to it. It was amazing for me, thinking, you know, like, oh, it's like a celebrity. It was a great story. And then the fact that it was written by a celebrity wrestler was amazing to me. Like, I know that if you're a fan of wrestlers and then you see these stories, you can actually see, like, wow, this is really an interesting short story in the back. The main story was great. But that's what really got to me, the short story. So did they come up with that on their own, or were you like, oh, you gave them an idea and then they went with it? How did that work out?
No, it was the other way. I mean, the stories were all their ideas. I helped them break it down, you know, panel-wise. It was different for everybody. And it's funny, Shane's story was a very personal story. He was actually on the phone with me while he was in the doctor's office waiting for an MRI on his neck. He was kind of concerned that his career was going to be over,
right?
And that's when we sort of hashed out the details for that story. That was, you know, which I think is to me is a real powerful story. You know, Daniel's story was pretty much all his. He actually he put together enough material. I probably could have written a whole single issue on it. So the tricky part for him was paring that down into a 6-page story. You know, and Rob's always been one of the few guys that was sort of an advocate for backyard wrestling. I think, you know, a lot of guys, you know, I think almost everybody in the business did it at one point or another when they were kids, and then tried to, you know, and then you try to sort of be like, oh, don't do that, it's not good for it. And I think Rob's one of the few guys who kind of recognized, like, yeah, I did it, we all did it, let's not be hypocrites. So, you know, it was fun working with those guys. You know, and right now I'm working with, AJ Styles. We've got his story done. And I'm working with Morrison and Kazarian on stories for the next book. So, you know, it's a fun process.
So where can people find the book? Where can people buy the book? Where can people find more about Headlock?
Well, we're all over the Internet, you know, in pretty much every form of social media. It's all Headlocked Comic. It's our Twitter. It's our Facebook. You can order the books online at headlockcomic.com. We've got a couple appearances. I'm going to be in Waterbury, Connecticut on March 6th with Jerry. And at a Northeastern Wrestling show. And then we're going to be at Planet Comic Con the weekend of, I want to say, the 13th, 14th, 15th in Kansas City, and then C2E2 with Jerry and Booker, and I believe Rikishi and Road Warrior Animal are also going to be at the booth that we're being hosted at, and that's in Chicago. Those are my next few appearances. Oh, and I'm going to be doing Super Mega Fest near Boston in April with Shane Helms. So we should, we're around a couple of different places.
Do you find that being independent gives you more of a voice? Because let's say Vince McMahon came up to you today and he said, I love this, I want to buy this, and I'm going to make it a WWE comic, which they do have out there. Would you be like, hell yeah, let's do it? Or would you be like, you know, I prefer to tell my own story and have it my own way?
I would kindly offer him to write something for him, but I don't think I would let them touch Headlocked. You know, wrestling is such a tricky thing, and I think, you know, a lot of wrestling type products kind of miss the mark when it comes to, you know, the actual business or the authenticity of it. You know, if you look at the, you know, The Wrestler was obviously a good, you know, a decent story. But beyond that, I mean, you're looking at Ready to Rumble and, you know, those types of things. And that's generally what you get when you get involvement in wrestling. You know, I don't want to tell a WWE story. I want to tell a wrestling story. I could tell a WWE story if they wanted me to, and I would gladly do that. But as far as Headlock goes, I don't know. The less editorial involvement, the better. It's too important to me. You know, I put too much time into this to let it get hijacked by someone else's sort of preconceptions of wrestling.
All right, so I'm gonna hit a touchy subject for wrestling. And back in the day, when I was a youthful lad,
while I was watching wrestling,
the big thing about it was that wrestling is fake. Wrestling is not real. Wrestling is completely fake. And as time went on, the major, WWE, once again, the big guys, kind of let people in on, oh, yes, it's scripted. What is your feeling on that? I mean, I can, in my view, you know, as I've grown older, I realize that, yes, it is a physical thing, but the end is already determined. So it's like if you're seeing the Super Bowl, these are athletes, they're really hurting themselves, they're really out there, but we already know who's going to win. What is your feeling on that?
I think at this day and age, I guess, you know, with the internet or whatever, I mean, it's kind of impossible to keep the lid on that, you know. But I also think that they shouldn't necessarily rub your face in it. I think that's where it bothers me. I don't mind that it's out there, but I do think that they should probably do a better job of not necessarily. You know, everybody knows Godzilla's not real, but you don't want to see the strings working his arms all the time. You know,
right.
You just have the decency to edit that out. And I think it's dumb on Twitter when people are feuding and they're, you know, taking pictures together, eating a croissant somewhere, having a coffee. Like, you know, I think that that's tough, and I think that sort of lessens it. And then I think when they do some of the real cartoony stuff. And it's funny, I say this because I love Chikara, and I think Chikara is a fantastic promotion. And I think if you do an all-comedy wrestling promotion, I think that's one thing. I think it's hard to mix some of the things that they've mixed. I think it somehow lessens people's appreciation for the toll that these guys take, and I think it's real easy to look at it like some kind of, you know, Bugs Bunny stunt show, nobody gets hurt. But I mean, people obviously do get hurt, and you don't want to diminish or, you know, the physical toll or the sacrifice that these guys are making.
I also think more people now are aware that it is entertainment, thus the WWE. I mean, Vince McMahon had a big issue with that years ago with them calling it a sport. And
you don't want to pay taxes,
right? Yeah. And my view was, since I went to the first WrestleMania, my view was, yeah, you could call it entertainment all you want, but these guys are getting hit. You know, they're amazing. And the women, amazing physical specimens. And they really are top athletes. And, you know, you could call it entertainment, but there's a skill and physical skill. And these guys are taking shots, you know, so.
No, I agree, and I think to a certain extent, sometimes, you know, when they make things silly, I think that, like I said, I think that demeans it, and I think that it makes people appreciate it less. So, I mean, I definitely think that there's a place for comedy in wrestling. Like, I think,
yeah,
you know, Colt Cabana does a really good job of, like, integrating comedy into his offense where it looks like it's a strategy to frustrate his opponents.
Right.
You know, and I think that that's something, but I think, you know, I think when you totally just destroy the fourth wall, I think that's, I don't know how I feel about that. I think that's the sort of thing that kind of hurt me.
Yeah, it was crazy because at the first WrestleMania, it was just a three-ring circus. I mean, you had Liberace in the middle of the ring with the Rockettes.
Really?
And they're dancing and they're doing the kick line. And I'm like saying, why? You know, why is he here with the...
That part of it's okay for me, I think, is it makes people look, and it makes it, it gives it that spectacle. I think it's when they do it in the ring. You know, I vaguely remember them doing a skit with Carlito and Hornswoggle where Hornswoggle drew a wall and ran through it, and then Carlito ran against the wall like Bugs Bunny, and I think that kind of stuff...
Yeah.
You know, that sort of cutesy aspect of it really kind of hurts things because, you know, that wasn't something that was ever done. And I think if you look at how Japan does their wrestling, I mean, they have total super comedy stuff, you know, and comedy feds and whatever, but I also think that they do, you know, they have their, you know, serious stuff too, and I think that it's taken differently. It's awkward when you mix it.
Well, that's my point. Don't mix it. Just have the serious stuff because these people spend their life really working at their craft, and it shouldn't be taken lightly.
But it's like the circus, basically. The circus is not... There's a lot of illusion in the circus, but it's a genuine entertainment art form, you know? And there's not a lot of people lined up to debunk how many clowns fit in one car or whatever. It's all specifically designed to entertain. I don't know why wrestling is treated so badly, because it's kind of in the same realm of entertainment, you know?
I think they do it to themselves to a certain extent with the some of the stories that they've chosen to tell over the years, you know? I mean, there's obviously been times, I'm sure, that if you're a fan of wrestling and you're watching it on TV and you're like, oh, man, I hope somebody doesn't walk in right now because this is flat out embarrassing. And that's you know, they I think that they've brought a lot of that on themselves.
So we have less than 3 minutes to go, so we're going to do our final thoughts. Hassan, you have a final thought?
Yes. It's cold over here. That's my final thought.
Charlie?
Not to track.
Charlie, final thought?
Final thought is the book is amazing, and wish you a lot of luck. You have a lot of great stars behind you here, which makes this more authentic, and wish you a lot of luck with the book. People, go to the website, get this book. It's
and
great.
Mike, you have a final thought for us?
You know, I just think every time we've put out a book, we've managed to top ourselves, and I'm talking to some people for book three that some pretty heavy names. So I think we got a lot of cool stuff in the future. So you know, I think you should jump on now.
So my final thought is that the book is really good. If you're really a fan of wrestling or even good storytelling, you should pick up this book. It was really good.
You're a fan of wrestling. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but if you're a fan of wrestling and a fan of comics,
yeah,
it's amazing.
It's a great combination.
Yeah.
So that about does it for this week on It Came From Radio. Join us right here and every week. I'm waiting for you to mess me up on WGBB. If you miss any part of this show, you can go on to our website, thank you, on www.itcamefromradio.com. You can listen to our archives. Will be up in a week or so. And we're also on iHeartRadio, so make sure you check us out on there. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, which is ICFTR, and follow us on Facebook at itcamefromradio.com. We'll see you next week.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.
In the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.